One dime in my pocket, I just can't find no phone.
Yeah, buddy. Welcome back to the Roundtable. It's a Thursday morning, 9:15. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel. We have a good panel today. Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick, is here. Good morning, Judy.
Let's get ready to rumble.
See, that's what I like. That's the attitude. That's what I'm looking for that today. Plenty of rancor. Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI and Director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration, Jim Hendler is here. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Congratulations for not turning on any microphones before they were supposed to be on today.
I've learned what to hit.
Very nice.
And what not to.
Very nice. That's why, you know, you're at RPI. Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo is here. Hello.
Good morning. I am not ready to rumble. I am filled with cheesecake and chocolate cookies, and I want to sleep more.
Oh, good for you.
You're always,
always
ready to rumble.
Cheer.
I'll be quiet.
Speaking of ready to rumble, WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Hey.
Everybody have a nice holiday?
We did.
Yeah? It's going well? Anybody?
Well, it is. Let me just send a message out to my grandchildren. Pick up your toys.
Are the grandkids still over?
Yeah.
Okay. And have you had enough of that yet?
No.
Good
for the
thing.
Record. No.
All right, Grandpa.
And Christmas may be over, but we're halfway through Hanukkah, so we got four more nights.
This is what I'm saying. Nice. So whatever you celebrate, enjoy yourself. It is later than you think. The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, if you want to mail us. Again, you know, short, to the point, on topic, you know, the rules. It's always the rules. No abbreviations, right? No links, no attachments. Proofreading is always encouraged.
How about one to a customer?
One to a customer.
You got one guy who writes about 9 letters every day.
Okay, one to a customer as well, or else you will be ignored.
That's an engaged listener.
Yeah.
I guess it depends.
Put it that way. What does it depend upon? Your reaction to the letters? It's after a holiday, and we're all gearing up here. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, Republican from Alaska, said she was disturbed to hear Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell say there would be total coordination between the White House and the Senate over the upcoming presidential impeachment trial. In an interview Tuesday, Murkowski said she remains undecided on how she would vote when the trial takes place. She was critical of the impeachment process in the House, describing it as rushed, but she said there should be a distance between the Trump administration and the Senate on how the trial is conducted.
Way overreaction to that. It's like already every newscaster in the world is saying, oh, we're seeing a break in the Republican wall. No, we're not. These are the same overestimated senators, as Gail Collins put them, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski and Mitt Romney. And that's it. That's all. And they're all just saying things like, oh, I am disturbed, which is hardly like I'm outraged at this violation of the Constitution. And they also, she managed in the same criticism to slam the Democrats. So, no, it's not a big deal. It shouldn't even be in the headlines.
But it was a slow news day yesterday.
Exactly.
It's the only reason it was in the headlines.
The Tulsi Nature Gabbard Award for definitive.
Nature abhors the vacuum.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening here. I think the main thing that I take away from Murkowski is that she has a state that is capable of sort of knowing its own political mind. And it has been, it has been known that when a politician puts their finger up in the wind with a little spittle on it and tells which way the wind is blowing. And I think this is important because it's clear she thinks there may be a problem developing. Now, I also think that if she were to vote for impeachment, which I doubt very much she will do, for a conviction, I should say, which I doubt very much she will do, that there will be a break. Other people will, seeing the same political dangers, come on board. So I think it's more important, Rosemary, and you know how I respect you, but I think it's more important than you may think.
Yeah, I remember when we all were saying, oh, look at Collins and Murkowski. Kavanaugh will never make it. Baloney.
Right. I think she's paying lip service to all of this. And it's sad, but I think there's a lot of Democrats out there that thinking, oh, if only the witnesses, the Senate holds a real trial and the witnesses get called and this all gets aired out. Guess what? Trump supporters thinks it's okay what he did. And nothing, no witness that they call will ever dissuade them about that. It's okay for him to appeal to the president of Ukraine to help him out with Biden. It only makes sense. And all of this is just political theater.
You know, I don't know, Judy, but there's a poll I heard about on CNN this morning.
Smalls.
Well, I don't think I'm...
She's revved up indeed.
I don't think I'm through with my sentence here.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's very kind of you. But 55% are for removal now. 55% are for removal, at least in this one poll. And that poll, I think, has, despite the fact that he's a Polish mold, has importance in that people will be looking at that.
Wake me up when McConnell says he's disturbed. Then we'll talk. Yeah. Before then, it's all baloney.
Well, wait a second. McConnell is the leader of a conference, right? So he has what are his major goals here? Keep Trump from attacking him, which he has done before, number one. And two, getting his people reelected and staying in the majority is the most important thing in the world for him.
And his calculus is that supporting Trump is the way to do that, Alan.
That's right.
It's very clear.
That has been the calculus up until now. However, things change, and I think things are changing here.
Well, I hope so. But the I'm the opposite. I'm the poll guy, right? I follow the data. So 538 is the one that does the best combined polling.
Why don't you explain
right
to everybody what 538
is? So 538 is a website originally grew out of a New York Times-based site.
Nate Silver.
And Nate Silver has always been the most consistent, closest to the correct thing. He called the Trump election wrong, but was actually the first person to say it might go for Trump based on polling as opposed to some of the other factors. And what he does is he combines a bunch of different polls based on what their accuracy is over time. They do a lot of other predictions, too. They predict sporting events.
Yeah.
They predict all sorts of things. But anyway, their latest polling shows about 47.8 in favor of impeachment and 46 against. So it's about a 2-point margin. But that's swapped over in the past 2 weeks. So about 2 weeks ago, it was the other way. So we are seeing some motion. Doesn't really mean much when it's that close.
And I don't think it means much when a lot of people don't even know what impeachment means. A lot of people think that impeachment means being removed from office. And so you're polling people on a term they don't even understand. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, actually, this poll used the word removal.
Right.
Sometimes removal. They use it. But a lot of the polls that we saw in the last month or 6 weeks just used the term impeachment. And I think maybe the numbers would have been higher for impeachment if they realized it was just this kind of slap on the hand going head to the Senate position. But I understand some value in polls, but after 2016, I'm sorry, I'm signed off those.
How about Vegas? Now, I saw a piece. I saw a piece about odds makers, and I didn't read the actual full text of the story saying, yeah, the money is on Trump winning in 2020. Did you see that, Jim?
I didn't see that one. I'll take a look for it.
What were the odds? Do you remember?
I did not get that far. But in your estimation, you follow the polls, Jim Hendler. Does Vegas, I mean, is that a barometer that we can watch, the odds makers?
It's worth watching. The thing is, they have, remember that they're playing an interesting game because they don't necessarily have to get it right.
They want to get action.
They want to get action. They want to get things to swap. And even if they end up paying out on a small bet, they take in on a big one. So particularly, I've looked into the sports betting. I never actually checked the political stuff. And on the sports, what you see is they're playing for the margins because when the games are close is where they make the most money.
Now, 538, you had mentioned they handle sports predictions as well. Yep. How have they done with that?
I have no idea.
So you don't follow the polls all that closely.
Sorry, I follow the political. I follow the 538 political polls.
Ah, fair enough. Okay. Donald Trump on Tuesday singled out Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who he says is indefinitely holding up sending the articles of impeachment. He says Pelosi hates the Republican Party. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said he has not ruled out calling witnesses, but also indicated he was in no hurry to seek new testimony either. Meanwhile, Chuck Schumer, the Senate's top Democrat, says any trial without witnesses would be a sham.
Right. It seems like any trial without witnesses would be a sham.
Anywhere.
Anywhere. I love this kind of wait-and-see game that's going on between Pelosi. She's exerting the power that she has. She hasn't got much power, but as soon as those get handed over to the Senate, the game's over. Who wins this battle? It's definitely intriguing.
Well, you know what? She's making a point. And her point is, you can't, as you just said, Judy, you can't have a trial if you don't have witnesses and if you don't have information. Now, that is something I think that the basic intelligence of the American people, including Republicans or some Republicans, will understand. You don't need all the Republicans. You need some of them. And as soon as these senators see that their existence is threatened, there is a potential for change.
So the latest thing that the Republicans in the Senate are floating are the idea of a resolution. They have the votes for it that would say there's nothing to these charges, dismiss it.
Well, we talked about that weeks ago. I mean, yeah. Alan, you said that will not happen.
It won't fly because, you know, you have a constitutional provision. It calls for impeachment proceedings to go to the Senate for conviction or for trial. And I don't think that you can do that.
Alan, now, the game is changing, though. I want to remind you that you did not you predicted Nancy would not hold up the articles, and they're playing a kinetic game.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, you did. You said no. Yeah. We can discuss when John Dean first proposed it. I remember.
Remember when you predicted that Santa Claus would die?
Yep, Santa Claus.
You didn't do that either.
Hey, now wait a minute. Let's get back on topic here.
It's not our accuracy. It's the way this is kinetically changing as they're both playing. Nancy and McConnell are playing chess. And her last move was to say, I'm not sending the articles over. So his idea of when he first said, no, we have to have a trial because it's in the Constitution, their lawyers are looking through it now, figuring out what they can and get away with. And I think this is their latest trial balloon to try to just say, okay, we'll pass a resolution, say there's nothing to this charge, dismiss it.
If, in fact, the American people think that justice is not being done, that the Constitution is not being followed, I would disagree with you. I think they can't get away with that.
I think the American people have no idea what's in the Constitution, and McConnell can lead them to believe to anything he wants them to. We've seen that over and over again.
Which is why Chuck Schumer is doing the right thing. He's educating people. Nancy Pelosi is doing the right thing. She's educating people. People are coming to understand what this is all about. And, you know, the Debbie Downer routine is not good.
Are you calling Rosemary Debbie Downer?
She's calling me Debbie Downer, yeah. But wow. I think it's real politics.
That hurts.
And I think Pelosi's capturing people's imagination because she's doing this strategic chess game that I'm telling you about. It's really cool to watch how she's maneuvering. That's different than Chuck Schumer, who has captured no one's imagination.
Well, no, I think Chuck Schumer is on the Pelosi team. He's doing what he has to do. Look, I have been not shy about calling out Chuck, who I very much admire. And who I've interviewed many times and all the rest of it, because I don't think he's played the dynamic role a leader has to play in the Senate. There, people are telling me, no, well, you know, he has to get along with McConnell. He has to get along with the president. He has to do this and that. I say, no, that's not the role of a leader in this case. In any case, I think that, back to my point, Schumer and Pelosi are on the same team, and they are doing the same kind of argumentation.
You know, Schumer's kept the message alive during this slow news week when it's always amazing to me that Congress will adjourn, and then it's like they've got important business before them and then just adjourn and stop working.
Well, you know, they're tired.
Yeah, I know. Like, give
it's
me a break about
their
those
money.
Long days. We always heard about their long days. It's like, really? A lot of people in America work a lot. Work
two
long
jobs, and they work a long time.
Week after week,
yes.
After week. Not
just
once in a
career. Just look at you, Ray.
Don't make this about me. Let's go back to June.
But really,
we've got the impeachment of a president, an impending Senate trial, and everybody's got to go home. I mean, okay, take one day off, but come back to Washington and really get some things discussed here. Don't take a break until January 6th.
You'd think if it was of monumental importance, they might, you know, hey, listen, we'll come back the day after Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get back to work.
I have generally thought that, but I have so enjoyed this last break.
Yeah.
And I think all of America does. I mean, even Trump did not tweet anything totally outrageous on Christmas Day. That's unprecedented for him.
I would like this, if Congress would just stay out to, say, February, March.
Oh, really?
Might make our morning conversations a little harder.
You try to host the show, Hendler.
I'll tell you what, it's
not the most easy thing in the world to do. Okay, the email address here. Yeah, it's panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. You might just, maybe you got a couple of days off, like the lawmakers, and you're relaxing. Feel free to drop us a note. Keep the letters brief, on topic, no abbreviations, please. And as Alan says, one to a customer, please, panel@wamc.org. Judy Patrick is here. Jim Hendler is here. Alan Shartok is here. Rosemary Armeo is here. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. This is the Roundtable Panel. More on the way. Yeah, buddy. You like the rockabilly? That's the Luster Kings. They're playing at Cafe Lena tomorrow. CafeLena.org.
I love Cafe Lena.
I love the rockabilly. Remember old Tex Rabinowitz? Remember those guys?
Tex Rabinowitz.
Oh, he was awesome back in the back in the 70s and early 80s. Oh, yeah, it's the Roundtable Panel. Thank you very much. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. Our panel today, WAMC's Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo is here, Jim Hendler is here, and Judy Patrick. And Judy, congratulations on the Christmas gift. You received cooking lessons. It's about time.
Now there is a husband who really cares about
So my point when I was discussing this with you guys earlier was I opened this gift, this email, and I was a little offended. I mean, it's a gift that...
Why?
Does he think I'm not a good cook? Or is this a gift so that I can be a better cook, so he can eat better food?
Well, this is it.
This is in the line of men giving bad gifts to women. And here we go. You got me started. Again, another issue. I get taken out for dinner on Mother's Day. Well, where's the gift for me? He gets to eat, too.
Oh, well, okay.
Well, you know, here's the problem with this line of argumentation. Judy. And that is that obviously you can find fault with any gift.
No, I can't. No, there are some gifts I can't find fault with.
Not a Zappa record.
Well, not a Frank Zappa record is what Santa brought me.
Yeah,
I would find fault with that.
180 gram vinyl. Oh, that's fantastic.
Right. But on the Judy issue, I think her wonderful husband wanted to say to her, "You are terrific. You're a wonderful cook, and I know how much this stuff interests you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to help out a little bit." That's what I think was going on there.
What we have here is a failure to communicate. Judy, I liked your example of the lingerie on Valentine's Day. That is a gift for who?
Yeah, who's that a gift for? It's not for the women.
Wait, you think lingerie isn't something that some women like?
Well, write in if you think that's a gift for a man or a woman when a man gives it to a woman.
The email address is panel@wamc.org if you want to weigh in on the whole lingerie issue. But, you know, the point is, I think Alan, you know, occasionally will make a point that is apt. And the point here is that you obviously clearly have some aptitude in the cooking department. And this wasn't a shot. This was like, it's like you're giving Alan broadcasting lessons. We know he's a great broadcaster already.
Oh, yeah.
But if we took him to school, he'd be that much better. You see? Yeah,
can I go over the year at Christmas I got a satellite dish?
Did you really?
Yes. And one year I got, when we were dating back in the 70s, I got records. And in fact, it was probably a carpenter's Well, I didn't have a record player. He should have known that.
Oh, well, he should have bought you a record player.
Would have been good.
You're still married.
Still married for 35 years.
You see if you're married after the show, huh?
I am not married, and gifts were part of the problem. You know, I would go crazy.
Rosemary?
Oh, every occasion I would look at, you know, clues and what he had and carefully buy stuff, and he would always open it up and there would be some horrible expression, rude expression of
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's,
and,
that's
I mean,
not
even
good.
My kids, my kids would open up like something completely unfun, socks, and go,
oh, thank
Grandma,
you.
This is exactly what I want. That's how you're supposed
right.
to do it.
Right.
Yeah. So I remember one year there was a briefcase I gave him, and he opened it up. It was beautiful. It was leather. I shopped all over for
it. Do you still have it? My briefcase is broken.
Oh, no, because he opened it up and goes, this isn't what I wanted at all. And I just took it without a word and walked out and exchanged it at the store for a leather coat for me, which I'm still wearing.
Good for you.
I wanted just to ask
a Now, why is
it was not a good marriage.
Oh, that was the marriage.
It was not a good marriage.
That was the marriage.
Yeah.
What did you say, Jim?
I was just curious why buying a briefcase is not considered like buying cooking lessons.
Well, briefcase is very handy.
He was a professor, Jim. He used it every day, and his was all battered and broken, and he wanted it.
And the cooking lessons, I initially took as a reflection of my skills. I'm not a great cook, I'll admit. There are a few things
I heard you're a great cook.
No, I'm not.
You just wanted to get that much better.
Right. But the other thing is the person who will benefit from me being a better cook is him.
So what? You
can eat it too. Wait. Doesn't he cook?
No.
He doesn't cook?
No, he's never cooked in his life.
Well, then it's clear you should buy him cooking lessons.
I said, is this something we're going to do as a couple? And we don't do couples things like that. No.
You know, my buddy Rocco does the cooking lessons over at the Foz. You should go. You and your husband ought to go to that.
Maybe
learn how to make pizza pie. My wife and I did that once.
That's cool. I would do that.
Yeah, it's really good. You know, here's the thing, though. I bought my wife some cast iron pans for
I would
Christmas.
Love that.
Because she asked for them, you know? She did ask for an ironing board, which I thought was over the line. I'm like, I will get hit with the ironing board, so I'm not doing
Think
this.
Think of the wrapping paper you need
if
for
if
that.
You gave cast iron pans with a diamond brooch in the smallest nesting pot, that would be okay.
She wanted the pans.
She didn't. She wants what a woman wants with a gift is something they would never ask for, but they would expect you know to
what?
Know they want.
When
Am I right?
Right, like things like a vacuum cleaner, an iron. You're a smart man not to get the ironing board, but things to do work with around the house are not appreciated.
You know,
they're not just to your benefit. He eats out of the cast iron pans. He gets the freshly pressed shirts.
Well, he should be cooking. I cook in my house.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How am I going to afford a diamond brooch? That is ridiculous.
That was an exaggeration.
Although, you know, when
you
our...
can think of something similar to a sweater, I don't know.
I bought her a coat, but I mean the thing is,
coat. There it is.
Unless
it was mink, we have to talk.
When our first child was born, I did get her a big diamond ring that the nurses liked.
That's
the three diamonds, the two little,
nice.
The ones I call before, during, and after. I think it's something. It's
okay.
Like
that's
past,
thoughtful.
Present, and future.
That's
I think
that's what it is, right? But before, during, and after is more appropriate. Speaking of complaints, the email address is panel@wamc.org, and I'm sure you're all going to complain now. Get to the program. Our All right,
Sorry.
We're back with the program. Alan, we got some emails.
We do. Not that many, so you got a lot of time to get in.
Okay.
It's at WAMC.org,
yeah,
right?
Panel at WAMC.org. Yeah.
Okay. Russ says, leftovers. Dear panel, as many of us continue to work on digesting yesterday's largesse, it may be worth considering what Pelosi expects from the impeachment leftovers. Trump surely will be more cagey about his extracurricular policy objectives, but he might well... as he reveals his exoneration, become more direct in his political diatribe. By comparison, Democratic contenders will increasingly seem more rational and reliable to undersides. Plus, there is no knowing what more may come out of further oversight hearings unremarked by the see-no-evil Republican Senate.
So, you know, I think that may be part of what's going on.
What's that?
Obviously, timing is a big issue here, and everybody's trying to figure out the political timing and what we want to hit when. But I think there's also the issue that, you know, there have been a few things already coming out. So, for example, a lot of people missed it because it was late,
good.
But the emails on, you know, sort of that Trump really was asking about, can I hold up the aid while we, you know.
And he did
this.
It. He ordered the holdup 90 minutes after he hung up on the president
of
Ukraine.
Yes, I mean, you know, so again, some new evidence is coming. And I think, you know, I think they're hoping that during the break you could see a smoking gun come out because there's things going.
I agree
most
with
of the
you.
People don't seem to believe that it matters that the Senate will do it anyway. But I think they're not really playing for the impeachment. They know what's going to happen. They're getting 67 votes out of the Senate. Unclear what could cause that. But I think the playing with the timing and saying, hey, we can now get, you know, if that number that's now, you know, 47-46 became 55-45, you'd have a huge difference either direction.
Are any Senate playing Democrats in danger of voting the other way on this?
Well, you got Manchin.
Yeah. Well, aside from him. Yeah.
Well, what do you mean, well?
Well, he's kind of a wild card there,
well,
right?
Well, he is, but he's a Democrat, and they would love to get rid of him, wouldn't they? Yeah.
Would they? You mean the people or the Democrats?
The Republicans would love to get rid
of
him.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Thank you for that.
So I don't think Trump's going to be more cagey going forward. I think he feels he can get away with anything, and he's going to continue to do just what he does.
Well, he says a lot, right? So now you read, I know we were talking about this, Judy, you read the interesting New Yorker article, right? Wasn't that about Rudy Giuliani?
The New York Magazine.
New York Magazine, yes, about Rudy Giuliani.
Yes, a great profile of Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, why don't you tell everybody what was in that?
Well, you know, it landed like in the middle, I got my weeks all mixed up, but during the holidays it landed, and it's by Olivia Nuzzi in New York Magazine, and it talked. She had a one-on-one with Rudy, hung out with him for a few hours, and in which time she revealed, you know, he talked about the fact that he didn't have any business dealings in Ukraine, and then he said he did have business dealings in Ukraine, and so contradicted himself. But the other thing was a lot of the talk about this article is the fact that she mentions in the fact that he hops in the car and wears a sweater over a suit over sweaters. Pants or his fly is open, and then
did you say his fly?
His fly was open, and then at one point he starts drooling down the side of his mouth, and he doesn't even realize
He didn't realize that was happening.
And then at one point he's walking down a hall and he kind of bangs into it, so he didn't seem like he was well.
There's been long rumors about why he may not be well, dementia or alcoholism or. No way. The Washington Post, by the way, is keeping track of the vote in the Senate. Interestingly, they're only looking at 99 senators because at the end of the year, there's a senator in Georgia who is leaving, which I don't think I realized. So far, 51 won't say whether they're for or against. The other ones, 11 are in support of impeachment, at least on one article, and 37 say they're against it.
Well, that's which senator? You said Georgia Republican, presumably. Will not be there.
Let me see.
That changes the equation a little bit.
It does a little bit because it's so. Johnny Isaacson, Republican from Georgia, is retiring at the end of 2019. This is according to the Washington Post.
Shall I go back to the letters?
Oh, let's take a break and then we'll go back to the letters.
Anything you say, Chief.
Thanks, Alan. Alan is here. Rosemary Armeo, Jim Hendler, Judy Patrick, Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue. The email address is panel@wamc.org, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable, 947. Those are the Lester Kings. We're hearing them on the bumper music today. They'll be at the Cafe Lena in Saratoga tomorrow night. Lester Kings, they've been around forever, and they're great. You like the rockabilly, that's the way to go. The email address is panel@wamc.org. Jim Hendler's here, Judy Patrick, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, and Alan, we do have more letters.
We do. Here's one from Roseanne, who says, poor Judy. Dear panel, lingerie is a gift for the man unless it's flannel PJs. Then it's for the woman. And Alan, the cooking gift would have been nice for Judy if he said the lessons were for him and both of them. Men! And 3 explanation points.
Right. And for the record, I proposed a joint venture and he said no. Just saying.
Oh, well,
Merry
cooking
Christmas.
Is woman's work.
Well, I got to say that in my house... it's not the same. It's not the same as you say. So for example, I will compliment Roselle on some nightwear that she is wearing, and we'll talk about it. And she'll say, you know, people assume it's not for women, but we wear this stuff for ourselves. That's what she
said.
Roselle said that, huh? Mm-hmm.
She did.
She's wise. She's wiser than you.
She's a wonderful woman.
Yes, indeed.
And I love her. So, Roseanne, good letter.
All right, thank you.
And then Gwen says, Justice Roberts, dear panel, please explain the role of Justice Roberts in the Senate impeachment trial. Okay, couple of things. I'll go first, yes or no? First thing is that Justice Roberts will have the gavel. The rules will be established by the majority party in the Senate. In other words, the Republicans will establish their own rules, and that's what this whole fight is going on. Third, this is, of course, the Senate impeachment trial, but the impeachment has already happened, and now we are waiting to see if there will be conviction on all of this. Roberts, for his part, will have the gavel. Based on the rules that have been set, he'll bang it down if something happens that is not within the rules.
Okay.
Got it?
Alan, I do have a question, though. I've been asking people, and no one seems to know exactly the answer. So supposing something happens in the court. So let's say a witness is called and doesn't come, and now it's going to go to the Supreme Court. Does Roberts have to recuse? And if so, you've got a 4-4 court. What the heck happens?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, but it's an excellent question. And I'm sure that a lot of our people have been thinking the same thing.
If anyone out there knows the answer, we'd love to know.
Well, I'll bet you we'll get an answer or two. Well, they might not be right, but we'll get some answers.
Well put, Raymond. That's why I love you. That's right. You know.
They might be right, though. Right?
Yeah, and they might be wrong.
Okay.
And they might not know.
Moving on.
Okay, so that's from Gwen.
Thanks, Gwen.
All right, let's talk to Garrett. Garrett writes, Congress work schedule. Railing against Congress for not being on the Hill every day is a stale one. They aren't on the beach. Sadly, they are raising money and hopefully interacting with constituents. And then there is the army of staffers that have more conventional work schedules, if not long hours, and that's from Garrett.
Well, they're not on the beach, but they're running for re-election is what they're doing. It's their own self-serving campaigning that they're doing.
It's clean, high-paid indoor work, and it does not compare to what too many Americans have to do to make money to feed their families.
Linda says, Christianity Today article. Do you see any hope that the article supporting impeachment from the magazine founded by Billy Graham will invite discussion and support for impeachment among Trump's base and the Christian right?
Well, now that might be. Trump is certainly worried about it. He's gone on the attack against the magazine. He's another competing Christian magazine is going to come out in support of Trump, which forced their editors to leave in protest over the way that was handled. There might be the beginning of a crack on this, a major support by evangelicals against a man who has no morals or whatever. So, yeah, that seems more hopeful to me than that the Senate is cracking.
Anybody else on that?
Yeah, I agree with Rosemary.
You agree with her?
I wondered why they've been silent for so long. Although, you know, we'll see what happens. And also, it'll be interesting to see what people are hearing from the pulpit every Sunday going forward.
Well, this was though still considered, even though it was started by Graham. This is apparently moderate. Has become a more liberal or moderate would probably be the better term.
This is not rabid evangelicals.
So it's unclear whether he's really losing support in that seriously evangelical community, which is, again, I agree with you, is bizarre. But
yeah, it still bears watching, you know, as opposed to Lisa Murkowski
I think
or
it's
Susan
that,
Collins.
Yeah, I mean, a crack in that support would be huge, but I just don't see it happening at the moment.
Yeah.
And Sam says Trump is a malignant narcissist, and his gaslighting is divisive and corrosive. These monikers should be repeated ad nauseum by Democrats. Divide and conquer is his modus operandi and should be elaborated on for success within the ranks of candidates.
Don't they do that?
That's from Sam.
Isn't that what they've been doing, the candidates?
I would think so. But yeah, maybe Sam is the first one to say it.
But if you do it too much, I think people get immune to it. Or you get, you know, if you call someone a malignant narcissist too much, it loses its. It's just like calling somebody a liar too often.
Well, it's propaganda, and it has to be done correctly to be effective. Trump's operation does it effectively. Make America Great Again, witch hunt. We could go through all of them. The Russian hoax. He manages to get those phrases in, repeats them endlessly, gets others to repeat it. If Democrats could do that, although I really don't think a malignant narcissist has the same ring as...
Yeah, put that on a bumper sticker, see what you could do.
Yeah.
Jim, what did you say? I'm sorry, I missed it.
So it's a framing issue. So I'm blanking on his name. There's a famous West Coast, was a linguist, now writes mostly political pieces. I'll get his name during the next break. But he's an old friend of mine. I've known him for 30 years. I can't do names anymore.
Old, what's
but
his anyway. Name? Yeah.
But
his theory.
But his
is.
Whole point has been that how you frame an article, an argument, is huge. And he's been saying it for years and turned it to politics and has shown that the Republicans have been incredibly powerful at that and spend tremendous amount of time and effort on it. So, for example, the estate tax being renamed the death tax. Right?
Yep.
Almost everybody was in favor of an estate tax. A lot of people are against a death tax, despite the fact that you're talking about exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. Obamacare versus the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, sort of how things are framed makes a huge difference in how people perceive them because they're getting that one word, that one term. And again, the Democrats, partly because the message hasn't been as consistent, partly because it's been all over the place, haven't done it. Clinton, Bill Clinton, you know, was actually very good at that. Was the last Democrat who really was good at turning everything into a little phrase that, you know, would resonate. It's the economy, stupid. And, you know, sort of we're just not seeing that right now. And the Republicans have gotten very good at it, as Rosemary was pointing out.
Frank says gerrymandering. Could it be that Republicans that have a blind fealty to Trump know that their districts are so gerrymandered that they don't dare tick off a handful of voters that got there in the first place by going against Trump, even though they know he's crooked? Frank from Middletown. There are many people who think that the gerrymander is the base of all of our evils that we are facing. I mean, I know that gerrymander is a terrible thing. We can see it. I mentioned this in my morning commentary, not to quote myself. But the state senate in New York State, in blue state New York, was permanently Republican because they had half a loaf in the determination, and they insisted that they be kept whole. And now, once it cracked, it's over. So the gerrymander, you know, and by the way, from now on, there'll be a gerrymander all right, but I guarantee you it'll be a different kind of gerrymander because now both houses of the legislature and the governor are in hands of the Democrats. Now, you may not see the same excesses that you've seen up to now because, after all, it is a blue state. Any kind of fair division of the districts would end up helping the Democrats. Is that clear?
I think it's clear, and I think you're right. And it does no good to go back and blame, but why did Republicans see decade ago more than that there were ways around the existing gerrymandering laws, that they could long-term affect essentially a takeover of state legislatures, a takeover at the lower levels? Democrats were so obsessed with the presidential politics and doing fairly well at that, at least for Obama, that they neglected all of that. That's a huge loss.
So, by the way,
partly because taking over all the state legislators cost a huge amount of money, and it was the Koch brothers to a large degree, and then their coattails that money would change politics
that's
in America.
That's a very good point.
Took a 30-year-ish kind of view of that, started very early on doing that very strategic investment. That said, you know, gerrymander has a huge impact on the House, less on the Senate, and much less on the presidency, mm-hmm. because, again, presidency is statewide. Now, where you could see things is if you start swinging some of the states and you start seeing things like was done in Maine, where they start splitting up the electoral votes and things like that. That can really change things a lot.
The Washington Post has begun to take a look at the effect of advocacy groups and organizations like the Koch brothers, the special interest groups, and their impact on politics. So things like immigration that we're seeing now, the horrible, xenophobic policies that we're seeing, these have been worked on by groups for decades now. So I think you're right that...
You know, the whole thing about climate change, right? The whole anti-climate change thing actually happened around the Gore election, right? The right wing saw that there was a threat to their tax base when you're an oil company. Two is you're looking at a potential thing. So he was running on an issue. They had to make that a non-issue, and they literally invested gazillions of dollars.
Let's take a break here. This is the Roundtable Panel. Jim Hendler is here, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, Alan Chartok, and you at panel@wamc.org. We'll break for news. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Thursday morning. It is 10:06, and we have the Roundtable panel in session today. Judy Patrick, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, and Jim Hendler. And Jim, you remember the name of the linguist out on the West Coast who you've known for 30 years, but you couldn't remember his name.
Well, let me thank the listeners, because we had several letters. A few people mentioned Noam Chomsky, but Noam Chomsky is actually an East Coast linguist who has also been very political, but this was actually George Lakoff, who's written some of the most sophisticated stuff about how to frame these arguments and about how it affects politics.
All right.
Good old George.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org, and Alan, we got a stack of them.
We do. Tamara writes on the economy, can anyone tell me if the deregulation and tax cuts that Trump has enacted will lead to detrimental consequences down the line? Understand that it's a good economy that it's booming, but will this lead us to a bubble that will eventually burst like the recession we experienced a decade ago? It's not fair that Trump gets to take the credit for an economy that Obama took 8 years to recover because of the last Republican president and handed over, wrapped in a bow, to the subsequent Republican president. Tamara.
Now, it's funny. You've read letters from her before. You think it's Tamara?
Oh,
I always wondered.
Her question sounds like homework for Aaron.
Okay.
You know, I am a great believer in...
NPR did have an article that came out this week called After 2 Years, Trump Tax Cuts Have Failed to Deliver on GOP's Promises. Yeah. I don't know if
that's... Well, that's true, but I want to go back to Ray's question, and that is I always prefer the Shakespearean tomorrow.
Yeah.
And can I mention that in a lot of local newspapers in New York State, they're running articles last week and this week about the federal tax cut for breweries and distilleries is due to expire at the end of this year. And these brewers and distillers are facing the prospect of increasing their costs and passing these costs on. So some of these tax cuts were built in to expire, and that's happening.
Now, that could be a crack in the wall of support for Trump, at least among the citizenry.
Hello. You want to read another letter?
You want another letter?
No, okay, you can play with your phone. We got time.
I'll do that if you want. Okay, that's good. Roger says, Senate trial. Good morning, team. Tell me, from your perspective, do you really want witnesses called to the Senate trial? If they open that floodgate, the right is going to call all the witnesses that Shifty Shift rejected in the... I wonder where this guy's coming from. Shifty Shift rejected in the House process. Both Biden's, Comey, Brennan, etc. Our country will never emerge from this morass. More importantly, it won't affect the outcome. Why go through this? Happy holidays. Roger in Adams.
Our country will never get out of this morass. Happy holidays.
North Adams,
a nice little touch.
Yeah, I think everybody should call everybody's bluff and have everybody testify.
I totally agree. Hunter Biden, get up there and just talk.
Tell us, because, you know, he did benefit from the fact that his father was vice president, but just get it out there. A lot of people do. I'd love to see an investigative piece about all the people in power and all their kids and what they do.
Right. And Hunter, he's already confessed. He's already admitted to all of the charges that could be brought against him. Let's bring it out there.
How can you have a charge? I mean, he took a job. I mean, there's no charge against him.
There are other things, too, like, you know, buying crack and being supplied by the Ukrainians with money and prostitutes. All of that. Is it any worse than what we've heard about Trump? Let's do it and then get Mulvaney out there. And Joe Biden could make a great campaign appearance out of this if he had some good PR people.
And John says, Dems breaking. Happy holidays, panel. Can the panel comment on Doug Jones in context of Lisa Murkowski?
Doug Jones from Alabama. He's the one who's been really iffy lately on impeachment. Remember earlier we talked about, are any Dems pulling away?
Yeah.
And I was trying to think of his name.
I mentioned him.
Did you?
Remember that. Oh, yes. Okay.
Sorry, I must have been drifting.
He is a Democrat, right?
He's a Democrat.
In Alabama.
He lost by a very, very close vote. And now Jeff Sessions is going to possibly run for that seat. So he's in trouble.
Right. it seems far more likely that a good number of Democratic senators will vote against impeachment than Republicans voting for it. I guess it's supposed to be then Republicans.
Conviction, that is, yes.
By the way, the last CNN poll that was published on their site was December 17th, and that poll, it was 46% removal and 49% against regards, and that's from John.
That's more in line with
Yeah, so the most recent polling, and if you go to 538, it's my favorite place to look, but you can find it. They have about 30 different polls, and then they average them and things like that. But what I found most interesting is the CNN poll is currently showing the anti-conviction forces winning, and the Fox poll is showing the pro-conviction showing. So you sort of have this very weird crossover effect going on that no one can explain.
And Peggy writes on the all-important question of the day, gifts for women.
here we go.
Good morning. None of you have been married long enough, I guess. 49 years? 49 years in the Shattuck family.
Roselle is a saint.
That's what everybody
says. Or she's stone deaf. That's the other option. I mean, I'm not sure.
None of you have been married long enough, I guess. What I want most as gifts are things I've asked for. My house is jam full of stuff people, quote, thought I'd like. I know what I want. Sometimes it's a vacuum cleaner. And that's from Peggy.
Hear, hear, Peggy. So when my wife asked for cast iron pans, that is what she gets. Agreed.
So we have a controversy in the family, and I'll just leave it unclear who's on which side, over whether gifts should be asked for very specifically or whether gifts are supposed to show the thought and the fact that you know the other person.
How about both? How about a little of both?
How about the way they do it in the Shartok family, which is Roselle likes an occasional piece of jewelry. I had tried in the very beginning to figure out what that should be, and she returned it usually. And that's it. So now we go together, and she'll say, look at something and we'll buy that. And she'll tell people that Alan bought me. Bought me a wonderful piece of jewelry. Don't you see?
Yeah.
You have to work this stuff out.
Here's the funny thing about that. You're a very understanding man.
You think
because
so?
Because you get your wife jewelry, and yet all these years you wanted a Cadillac, and your wife said, no way.
That she did.
And yet you she still said, go ahead and get the jewelry.
She said, you want to know how you spell Cadillac if you want one? D-I-V-O-R-C-E.
Oh, boy.
And she's so clever, too.
All right, moving on.
Okay. And Ken says, gifts? Does the panel mean I should not have given my wife a toilet seat for Christmas?
Not if you use it as well.
Valerie, I agree with Rosemary. Pole Schmoles.
That was Judy.
That was Judy. I'm really enjoying the show today. I love hearing your humor, your banter and laughter. Nice change from the political doom and gloom provided by that jerko Trump. Love you guys. Happy 2020 from Valerie.
2020 is coming. Nice. Wow.
Yeah. Nancy says, Pelosi's goal. Welcome back. Isn't it possible that Pelosi's goal is not to force a trial in the Senate, but to force the Republicans to look like they are Trump's toadies and making them more vulnerable in 2020? Thank you, Nancy. My answer to that one is, well, whatever her purpose is, it certainly is working out that way.
Well, it doesn't take much effort to make them look like Trump's toadies when Mitch McConnell's saying I'm in lockstep with whatever the Trump White House wants.
Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about that. I was watching when he said that, and it caught me by surprise then, and I still can't make sense of that. If he is playing a game and he knew either he made a colossal mistake or he knows what he is doing, and there is some reason that I can't figure out why that was a good idea.
You're a very smart man. I'm going to give you a one-word answer. Fear. Because he knows that Trump turns on everyone, including in the past him.
Yep.
And he's concerned that if he doesn't work in lockstep and do everything he's supposed to be doing to keep this guy happy, it will happen again. That's what I think.
Hmm. I just don't understand why everyone is in such fear of him, of President Trump.
I agree.
Well, he's got a lot of power.
Yeah, but power for what? To primary them.
Yeah, sure.
So
that certainly is.
I think Pelosi's holding up the articles until after primaries.
Yeah, that could well be. Good point, Rosemary. And Linda says, being prepared, I fully expect the popular vote to go for the not Trump candidate. But that does not mean the Electoral College won't give him an election again. We are too complacent waiting for the electorate to get rid of Trump. We definitely need a plan B. Even if the Democrat wins, there has been so much damage done, especially with unqualified federal judges, that we need to be planning for a bumpy future recovery. Got suggestions of how we do this? Well, and that's from Linda. So your point about the Electoral College, and we get these letters all the time that say, we've got to fix the Electoral College now. Well, that can't happen because it's going to take an amendment to the Constitution to do that, and that and those states aren't there. Am I right,
Yeah, not to mention that the Senate has to be involved in helping to make the amendment happen.
Yeah. I would think. Okay, and thank you.
Have a better chance at comprehensive immigration reform than getting rid of the Electoral College.
Thank you to Linda for that. And David says, panel, we are worried that religion has been invading our politics and violating our Founding Fathers' well-considered separation of church and state. But with Mark Galli's Christianity Today editorial, we can see that politics have invaded our religions all around the world, Christian, Judaism, Islam, Hindu, and others, as politicians in the name of religion inflict attacks, smears, and harms on others. And that's from David. Yeah, what happened this weekend? Giuliani, you were mentioning that before, Judy.
He's a better Jew than Soros, who was a Holocaust survivor. And Stephen Miller, there are Jewish representatives and public officials calling for his removal because he's an openly white racist, white nationalist. So politics and religion have always been.
I'm a little confused. That's the last thing you said.
Stephen Miller, who's
yes, I know who he is, and
Jewish,
I know
a group of Jewish. Judy, you wanted to say something? I don't want to.
No.
A group of Jewish leaders and politicians have made a plea, have urged the president to fire him.
By Giuliani.
Is the fire Stephen Miller.
Oh, Stephen Miller. Yeah. Well.
No, Giuliani. We're just waiting for the Southern District of New York to take care of him, Alan.
Yeah. For me. You know,
Trump is absolutely going to pardon them all. Have you seen his statements about how poor Michael Flynn, poor what was the other
Manafort?
Yeah, he's going to pardon them.
Setting the stage.
Yep. Well, and Stone will get it too. Stone was the other one he mentioned.
Russ says sensationalism. Sensational announcements and accusations always get attention whether they deserve it or not. Will the Democrats, quote, lower themselves to this kind of strategy to get the attention to their messages? Russ in Greenfield.
You know, part of the blame lies at the foot of the media as well, because they'll take a story like that and run with it. And as we talked about in one of the breaks, there's plenty of other news happening in the world. We don't need to have CNN keep talking about a break in the Republican wall.
But incendiary news, I mean, you were in the newspaper business. You put it on the headline, you're going to sell a paper, right?
We sell subscriptions. The day of newsstand sales making or breaking
Let's just go back 20 years then, all right? Okay. But, I mean, in those days, a headline is a big deal, right?
It's less influential on sales than you think. I think any newspaper publisher will say a headline. It's continuing coverage will sell newspapers or sells allegiance to a particular cable news channel. But again, I think CNN is supposed to be covering the whole world. They should be having other stories on their air today, other than could the strong economy help Trump?
This is not an indictment from Judy on CNN, but all the news networks,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, okay. Exactly. Trump or CNN happens to be on in the little room we're in.
The studio. Studio A. That's right.
The little room.
Dave says, it's the Electoral College, stupid. Until there's a change in the presidential election, shouldn't candidates appeal to the Electoral College selection? However that's made, Dave in Northampton. The way that that's done, by the way, is that the parties appoint people who will not deviate from their selection, from the winner in their party. So, good idea, been talked about a lot. Every once in a while, an elector makes a little noise that they may go for the other guy, but it doesn't happen.
Right. That happened a little bit in 2016 where you had some of the electors saying things. It's always an interesting story that a local newspaper will write, will look up who the electors are and interview them. And they're going to do whatever the vote tells them to in the state.
Well, what's happened to that movement to actually make it, to legislate that electors must vote for whoever the popular vote picks in a state? Do you remember that?
Right,
it started several years ago, and many states signed up to that, but I've not heard anything in a long time.
Well, it's gotten complicated because you have some states. So Maine right now has four electoral votes and assigns them by their districts.
Yes.
So they're able to split the electoral vote. There have been analyses done which said if all the states did it, it would drastically help the Republicans, mostly because that's what would make gerrymandering
suddenly very impactful in the Senate. This is simpler. Whoever gets the popular vote has to get the electoral vote. Right.
And it did take off for a while. It looked
is that now? That would be
interesting. It might go, but it hasn't.
Mm-hmm. I suspect there'd be a court challenge to that, however,
of course,
because it completely disembowels the Electoral College.
It also
college.
Gets to the who's in power now and who's willing, they're not willing to change things.
Why disembowels?
In other words, the Electoral College is there, right, to make sure that vast swaths of rural America are not
where there's no people
drowned out by
cities where there's lots of people.
Right, exactly, though. Exactly.
Yeah. That's the whole issue, and that's why the Electoral College was
there. But there are people there.
That far fewer. California is misrepresented. California and New York could go to court and say, we are underrepresented, and that's why, you know, it's time to change things.
We have no more emails. Democratic presidential contender Michael Bloomberg has cut ties with a contractor that used prisoners to make calls for his presidential campaign. The online news site The Intercept reported Tuesday that Bloomberg's campaign contracted a New Jersey-based call center company that, in at least one instance, used Oklahoma inmates to make calls on behalf of the billionaire's campaign. The former New York mayor says he was unaware of the arrangement until a reporter raised it. Bloomberg said in a statement that the campaign is making sure its vendors more properly vet subcontractors in the future.
Really, the most interesting thing that hit me in this story was inmates are doing telemarketing. Wow,
calls.
That's really interesting. You know, aside from the fact they're probably getting 99 cents a day for it, and this is something the Bloomberg campaign should have vetted before, but wow. A crazy story.
The whole emphasis of this story is wrong. Judy is right. It ought to be on our prison system. The law is that you have to get at least minimum wage for that work, which this contract does allow. The problem is who's getting it. It's going to the prison system in Oklahoma rather than to the inmates being used. And yes, he should have checked, but they're all doing it. No one knows that. And as soon as he heard about it, he did the right thing and canceled it. So Bloomberg, if I were he, I'd be turning this around and saying, wow, look at what I've discovered. I have a program for prison reform. I am now adding this. Inmates, if they're going to do this kind of work, need to be compensated.
Wouldn't you like to be in the fly on the wall as Bloomberg read this story for the first time? In other words, here's this guy with unlimited amounts of money, hires the best professional staff he can hire.
And then find out about a subcontractor.
And then holds on. You know, it's just crazy. He must have blown his top when he saw this. This is not why I hired you people. This is not why you're supposed to be there. This is crazy.
I'm not necessarily a Bloomberg fan. This is not in support of him. If even this had happened to Trump, I would say this is not fair. The emphasis on this story needs to be on the prison systems, or the Oklahoma prison system in particular, not on his campaign.
Well, I would disagree with you. I mean, this is a practical political world. And, you know, you expect that when you're spending the money, you're going to get value for what you're doing, not something that's going to bite you in the butt.
Right. And when he found out he didn't, he immediately
made up for it.
He fixed it.
He sure is spending money. We saw in the news today Bloomberg and Steyer have $200 million in ad spending. And Bloomberg has been in for about a month now.
See, I get the Bloomberg thing. I don't get the Steyer thing. He just keeps putting those ads on the television, and he doesn't move. in terms
well,
of
he's his... managed to get into all the debates, and that's largely because of the ads bringing in supporters.
I don't think they're the best ads in the world.
No. The Bloomberg ads are good.
Under the new rules, mm-hmm. right, very unclear whether Steyer makes it or not.
Yeah, so, he's been up on social media a lot. He has to have
Biden, Sanders, Warren, Buttigieg, and Klobuchar have made it to debate so far.
Have
made the five. There are three criteria we could get into it, but Bloomberg is close. Steyer is way down. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, his ads are boring. The Bloomberg ads are good. I think if we're going to win this, or if he's whoever's going to win this has got to put together some slick advertising. I think Trump has shown how powerful that medium can be. We talked earlier in the fact that the millions and millions of dollars that are headed into broadcast television, it keeps that medium alive, I think. Mm-hmm. You don't see
That's
much campaign – just complaining a little bit here. You don't see much campaign advertising in newspapers anymore.
Mm. Right.
You know, there is something called an assumption. People run for political office and they make an assumption. They said, this is the horse I'm going to ride. I'm going to ride it. Steyer said, okay, what did he say? He said that this is a bad guy and all the rest of it, and he's going to ride that horse. But Gillibrand made another assumption. Her assumption was women would flock to her mm-hmm. candidacy, and they didn't. So sometimes those assumptions go wrong.
That's true. They have the money so they can do that. Not all of us can, but he believes in this. He thinks this is important, and he's persistent. And he's a success in the business world, both of them, Bloomberg and Steyer.
Proving what?
That persistence paid off. At first, it didn't look like they would succeed in business. They put money and hard work into it. So it's natural that they would think that it would work in politics, too. What is it you say about you repeat
but
the things that
right?
were successful
your
for?
Point?
And we don't know yet with Bloomberg. I don't think so.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about Bloomberg. Bloomberg, I think, has
I don't think it's going to work with Steyer, but you are the predictor of why he's doing this. He's seen it work for him in the past, so he's repeating his past successes.
Steyer, we're talking about now.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, no, I think Steyer should have realized that whatever it is that makes a Bloomberg more popular than he is isn't working for him.
Oh,
I don't get it.
He may well come to that point. If I were he, I would be thinking, oh, Bloomberg thinks he's better than I am. We'll see what happens. He hasn't been in a debate. He's banking on a performance on Super Tuesday, which is, what, March?
So, yeah, and in fact, Maine just announced the rundown for the primary in March, and there's 12. I mean, Deval Patrick will be there. Tulsi Gabbard will be there. Bloomberg, Steyer, everybody will be on that ballot.
Right, and if there's so many on the ballot, doesn't it, the votes get dispersed, and so it's going to be a real challenge for somebody to stand out.
Well, yeah, I think you're going to see Iowa, right? Then you're going to see New Hampshire. Then you've got Super Tuesday, and so it's going to be a lot of shaking out in those first things. Iowa will get far more
attention
than it deserves, because
mm-hmm.
it always does. New Hampshire will be interesting. But you know what? What is interesting in all these numbers, right, is Biden is polling at the top. Buttigieg is doing pretty well in Iowa. There's a chance he'll take it. If he doesn't take Iowa, then it's going to be really bad for him. But then you see Warren and Sanders splitting a vote that's more powerful. And Alan has said this a number of times. It's something we agree on, is that, you know, you have that progressive vote that's being split.
Mm-hmm. And Bernie and
if
Warren.
Those mm-hmm. two somehow became one, which isn't going to happen given the personalities.
Unless one bails.
Maybe one bails sooner or later, but I hope it's not too late for it to do anything
that ain't
to make
happen.
It an election. So,
no?
Yeah, I don't think so either.
You think they'll both go right to the end?
Yes.
Right.
As long as they can. I think
they've
so
made an investment now.
Yep.
And the one thing that Bernie now realizes, I suspect or think, is that you really got to grab the golden ring when you can. Because, you know, you may
Which
not
was
ever
four
get
years
a second
ago for
chance.
Him, right?
Yes.
Let's take a quick break. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here. Rosemary Armeo, Jim Hendler, Judy Patrick. And, of course, you can join us if you wish. The email address is panel at WAMC.org. It is a shortened roundtable today. We'll have a Hanukkah special coming up at 11, but we will be back in a moment. 1, 2, 3, hang up. That's my motto on Vox Pop, oddly enough. It's a roundtable. It's 10:34. It is the roundtable panel. Judy Patrick, Jim Hendler, Alan Chartok, and Rosemary Armeo. And we are in bonus time now. We're going up to 10:47.
Bonus time.
10:47 and 26 seconds.
Okay,
so
man.
Get to the lettuce.
Okay, the lettuce?
The lettuce.
Okay. What's the kind of lettuce you don't want to have these days?
It was romaine.
You think that's been...
My mother only eats iceberg. She did that yesterday. She's looking at spinach and arugula, and I'm like eating them. She goes, oh, God, this is like grass.
Okay, Ken says, national popular vote. The compact you have been referring to is the National Popular Vote Compact, which goes into effect when states with 270 electoral votes approves. That's what it takes. To date, states and D.C. with 196 electoral votes have approved. I think ranked choice voting more doable, which would mean a Nader or a Stein, or would not be spoilers. Thank you, Ken.
Yeah, so there was an interesting proposal floating out around making it so typically the president of the United States has not gotten over 50% of the vote, partly because of third parties, partly because of things like happened in the last election where the winner got less vote. But so there was a theory that you could do something where you do the kind of things that's being done in some states and things like that, where you say until somebody gets 50%. So you start with, you know, the five or six candidates who may all be listed. All those who don't, you know, the top two end up running eventually, and then you're forced into it. But it's anything that tries to change the electoral system in this country is largely doomed. First of all, you know, the Constitution thing has this, like, stuff in there that's kind of hard to throw out. But then there's also the fact that the elections belong to the states, not to the federal government. So you can't really pass a single law that fixes everything. So
which is why, Jim, Massachusetts is going to have ranked voting. Yeah. It's coming up for approval now. Whether people want it or not, we'll see. But I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Ken says, national popular vote. We have done this. We read this one. Thank you very much. Thank you to David, who writes on impeachment. Hello, panel all. I think the only thing that Pelosi and Schumer should demand that the Senate agree to in the trial is that the Senate must, in capital letters, release and play, in capital letters, the actual recording of Trump's call with Zelensky. Just like Nixon, that would be Trump's downfall. His voice, his words, played for the nation to hear. No transcript will ever come close.
I think Trump has been out there saying many wild and fanciful things, and it hasn't gotten him in trouble yet. I think there's a reason the Democrats haven't called for the absolute recording, is because they probably think it's essentially what the transcript says.
Do we have the absolute recordings?
No. They're supposedly they may exist, and we don't know what the Ukrainians have, the Ukrainians
or the Russians.
Or the Russians, right. But we do know from testimony that some of the edits that, what was the guy's name, the guy that they vilified? He said that he asked for clarifications based on the notes he took, and they were not made. And they are more damning to the president. Yeah. It's like calling for investigations specifically of Burisma, not just of corruption in Ukraine. And those were not made. So there is a lot of support for the idea that the transcripts would be more damning.
And the last letter, predictions for the next few years. Hi, panel. Happy holidays. If Trump loses the next election, what do you think will happen to the Republican Party? Will he run it from the sidelines, or will the party continue to work without him? I don't think that party can survive in the long run. It's too corrupt now, and that's John from Akron.
You know, I remember a saying when Trump's election was going to be the death knell of the Republican Party, because I thought that they were losing their ideals. They were going off track when it comes to some basic principles.
Spending, for one thing.
Spending, yeah. So many things that you think Republicans believe in have gone by the wayside, and so what is left for them?
Good point.
But as a functioning entity, they seem to be doing fairly well in terms of controlling at least judgeships.
Yeah.
I know I didn't send this link, but this morning there was a piece in Politico. Democratic insiders, Bernie could win the nomination. And I'm quoting here, suddenly Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign is being taken seriously. in private conversations and on
suddenly, oh geez.
Well, for months, here's quoting again. For months, the Vermont senator was written off by Democratic Party insiders as a candidate with a committed but ultimately narrow base who was too far left to win the primary. Elizabeth Warren had skyrocketed in the polls, seemed to be leaving him behind in the race to be progressive voters' standard bearer in 2020. However, the piece in Politico goes on, in private conversations and on social media, Democratic officials, political operatives, and pundits are reconsidering Sanders' chances.
Well, the numbers for, you know, so again, they're fighting for the same piece of the electorate. And so when one goes up, the other goes down. And the Warren was shooting up and then has now leveled off, which is means Sanders is staying in there and is slowly picking up votes.
Well, the basic premise, Ray's basic premise that he's offering to you, Jim, is do you think Sanders has a shot?
So, you know, my belief on this, who knows?
it really gets down
to the situation of you've got a progressive bloc, right, that's now split between two or three candidates. If that unifies, that could put someone in. At the moment, it's very unclear to see who that unifies and who it would be.
Well, what does that split look like to you? In other words, okay, so you have a progressive group, right, and they're split between Elizabeth and Bernie. Can you characterize who's on each side? No? I could take a shot at it. I'm not sure I would be right. But I think traditionally in this country, the left identifies somebody as a candidate who, I mean, we're talking about the pretty vehement left, somebody who they could support. We've seen it from FDR on up with a certain vice president. So the question is, could you make a difference between the two candidates? Who's supporting them? Now we're into something interesting.
I think that's a great question. We have not seen, certainly the polling data doesn't reveal that yet, partly because most of these polls aren't down to the level. It's hard to compare two candidates when you still have 15 or 18 in the running.
But I think there's some moderate Democrats that might be more willing to go with Sanders than Warren, just from based on listening to Democrats talk. I think that they're it's not just the progressive portion of the party that they can get votes from. If all the other candidates disappeared, I think who is more likely to be able to garner those moderates? I think there is some give in that section of the party.
I thought this was interesting. David Brock, who was a Hillary Clinton in that camp for a long time, and this is quoted in the same Politico piece that was out today. He says, it may have been inevitable that eventually you would have two candidates representing each side of the ideological divide in the party. A lot of smart people I've talked to lately think there's a very good chance those two end up being Biden and Sanders. And that's from David Brock.
Well, I don't know. Historically, has an old white guy ever won in America?
Yeah, every election, except for Barack Obama.
Yep.
Well, Henry Wallace, you will remember, was a VP for FDR. You all remember that, right? And he was considerably left of center, and the Democratic, the Caucasian old guy Democrats threw him out. They thought he was too dangerous to continue. But he had, you know, the Pete Seegers of the day and everybody else out there campaigning for him. And I believe that same group who was so pro-Wallace also forms a basic part of the Bernie entourage.
They're all dead, Alan. I don't get what you mean. The same sort of people, right?
That's right.
And those are what? What is
those? Those are your center left.
Center left?
Yes. And I think Elizabeth Warren, who has terrific, messages that she's putting out there, is center left-ish. There's a difference between the two.
This is when an infographic would come in handy.
Yeah, do you have one?
I'm trying to put one in my head, but it is the spectrum is very interesting.
Well, how do you actually qualify that spectrum? In other words, Bernie could say, I'm further left than you, Elizabeth. Elizabeth could say, I'm further left than you, Bernie. I mean, who really knows?
Right, or left.
And that's not the only factor. There's gender politics involved in this, too. There's geographical politics involved in this.
Right. The question I was discussing with Alan earlier, is America ready to elect a woman president?
No, I don't think so.
Is that right?
I don't think I'll see it in my lifetime.
Well, why would you say that?
The Hillary election was a really good example.
Hillary was close, whisker close. Are you kidding me?
Well, she actually won the popular vote, but it's not set up that way. I don't expect it.
All right. The email address is panel@wamc.org. We only have a few minutes left here in the panel section of the show.
Telesport writes, faithless electors. The term for a designated elector who does not vote for a winning candidate is a faithless elector. The Ninth Circuit has ruled that Colorado law requiring faithful electors is unconstitutional. Colorado is presently seeking a grant of certiorari from the Supreme Court, meaning that the Supreme Court would take on the case.
Right. And you have interesting listeners that know a lot of interesting things.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
that was a big story a couple of weeks ago.
Andrew says, educate me. Panel, please, could you educate me on why some of the Democrats have gone after Tulsi Gabbard in the past? I remember Clinton giving her a real roasting a few months ago.
She's always been unconventional, and she does things that, and she's very young and very ambitious, which are apparently not good qualities for women in American politics. So she went, for example, and spoke to the president of Assad, who many of the rest of us consider a hateful war criminal. She went and talked to him. She stood out against impeachment, even though she thinks what Trump did was wrong. She made a very controversial vote recently where she missed all of the hearings. She was not in the chambers and then came in and voted only present, which is not taking a stand at all. And the most controversial is that she's widely supported on the internet by groups that have been connected with Russian trolls. And so Hillary Clinton gave voice to fears that she was being promoted by the Russians as could run as an independent, which would seriously hurt the Democrats. And then Tulsi Gabbard went out on a rampage against Hillary, as it has been, who was trying to hurt her. And who knows, it may be right. And then there has been some investigative reporting done on her in her home state. She was involved as a young woman in a cult, a very strange religious cult based in Washington State. And a lot of her campaign money has gone to that cult for political coverage.
You
even
never
failed
to
experience.
You never failed to impress me.
Well, I mean, I do want a woman president, but I don't want anyone.
All right, we have 30 seconds.
Okay, Polly says, caucuses should be eliminated. Only secret ballots should be allowed for election. Why? Because caucusing, in other words, can allow abusive spouse to control their partner's choice. Having a physically go and stand with a group is a very public act and could force an abused partner to either go against their own wishes or go against their abused partner's wishes and result in retaliation. Secret ballots allow freedom of conscience. Happy New Year to all, and that's from Polly.
All right, Polly, that's where we will have to leave it today. I want to thank our panel, Judy Patrick, for being here. Jim, and good luck with the cooking lessons, Judy.
Thank you. I'll bring some of
thank you. Jim Hendler, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, thank you all for being here. Thank you for listening. There is more Roundtable ahead.